Hey, I'm Tony Moreland, and this is POW, Podcast of Wisdom from the Samsung Developer Program, where we talk about the latest tech, new trends, and give insight into all of the opportunities available for developers looking to create for Samsung. On today's show, I interview Roger Kibbe, Senior Developer Evangelist for Bixby, Samsung's intelligent assistant technology. Roger's a tech geek when it comes to voice technology. He even launched his own voice startup. But it was when he entered a Samsung hackathon and won, the Bixby team said, "We need this guy." Enjoy. Hey, Roger, thanks very much for joining me on this podcast. You know, I have to ask you first, who is Roger Kibbe?
Well, I guess I can answer that question two ways. Well, one, I'm a husband and a father to two teenage daughters.
Oh, boy.
But yes, it keeps me pretty busy these days. But professionally, I'm a senior developer evangelist for Samsung Bixby. And what does that mean? It really means I go out and talk to third-party developers and agencies and companies and encourage them to go build upon the Bixby platform. You know, I have a long career in technology, been doing it for about 25 years, consulting. I've been a technology architect, technology strategy. I founded my own startup, and I've been in voice for the last several years, about the last 18 months or so, less than 18 months with Samsung.
Right about the same time that I did. And interesting, we both have the same title at Samsung, me being a senior developer evangelist for the developer program, doing something similar to what you're doing, you know, going out and teaching developers and designers how to create for Samsung. So pretty cool. We're along the same lines.
Yeah, I think it's an amazing job, actually, kind of a combination of you got to be familiar with the technology, but you also, if you're, you know, love to go talk to people and understand what they're doing and figuring out how technology can help solve their problems or help enable them to do something amazing. What a combination.
Exactly. So tell me a little bit how you actually got your start at Samsung. I heard that you actually won a contest at our developer conference, and that's what put you on the radar at the folks at Samsung. So tell me a bit about that.
Yes, I heard about Bixby in 2018. It was still a private beta in early 2018. And I was doing my own voice consulting and my own voice startup then. And I thought, hey, there's this new platform. They have this hackathon. I love to play with new technology. I'm one of those people who buys the first piece of new technology, to much to my wife's chagrin often. So I went, downloaded it, and started playing with it. And I realized this is something really cool and doing things in a different way than what the other voice platforms are doing. So I built this capsule. Capsule is a voice application in Bixby terminology. And it was all about just being, can I recycle this? Can I compost this? Do I need to throw it in the trash, right? Question I often get from my daughters is, Dad, what bin does this go into? I, you know, sometimes scratch my head and, you know, there's three bins and I want to be a responsible citizen and put it in the right thing.
Sure.
And I thought, hey, you know, that's a pretty good use case for voice because you want to know that right away. So built that for Bixby. We had this hackathon. I got in the finals, and then in the SDC, Samsung Developers Conference in 2018. All of us finalists were invited to go, and then we presented on stage, and I ended up winning that hackathon.
Wow.
Yeah. And then that led to, I met Adam Shire and a bunch of the Bixby people, had some good conversations. One thing led to another, deeper, longer conversations. That was in, I believe, September 2018, and in January 2019, I joined Samsung, or joined VivLabs, subsidiary of Samsung that's behind Bixby.
You've been in this tech industry for about, you said, 20, 25 years, assuming then that your education is in the tech field. Is that what you majored in when you were in college?
No, good question. No, I actually have a psychology degree.
Well, that comes in handy with two teenage daughters.
It does indeed. Actually, it comes in handy in a lot of ways, actually, because, you know, I think our success personally and professionally is, you know, interacting with people in a lot of ways. But yeah, you know, I have a deep interest in human behavior and how that works. And so I decided to major in psychology. But I've always been, you know, there's the geek in me, and I've always played with technology. And so, for instance, I took a couple classes, computer science classes, for fun, including a Lisp class. So if anybody knows Lisp out there as a listener, that's usually not a language that you'd equate with fun, but I had a lot of fun with it.
Expand a little bit more on Lisp. What is that?
Well, it's a programming language that is used, I would think, pretty much only in academia today, but it's often used to teach kind of the fundamental, was, I don't know what modern CS classes are probably moved beyond it, kind of fundamentals of programming. And there's a lot of what's called recursion in it, where a function that you write calls itself. So it gets very complicated. If you're a developer, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not a developer, there's kind of this circular reasoning where it kind of just goes in circles and calls itself and calls itself. So it gets very confusing in a lot of ways at first, but it's actually a really good way to learn a lot of the fundamentals of programming. I've done programming before that. I started in high school, actually. So
graduate college, you actually get right into the tech industry. Just mention a little bit about this startup that you had created and then how that led you into, you know, your interest in voice.
Yeah. And, you know, a little bit, it gets back to thinking about my whole technology career. I said I was a consultant, and then I worked in technology strategy for Gap Inc. for many years. And I've always looked for technology to go do something for us and then get out of the way. And one of the challenges I see with technology today is often, yeah, it's incredibly powerful and it does something useful for us or something we want it to do, but then it doesn't really get out of the way. And when I first saw voice and started playing with voice assistants, I was like, I didn't get it at first, but then after playing with them more and more, I was like, you know what, this kind of fulfills that kind of lifelong ambition of, hey, go get something done and then get out of the way. It's the best tech I know for getting out of the way. So in back in 2017, I had a really good kind of technology job with a big corporation. I'll call it my cushy corporate tech job. And I decided to get, you know, I had a little bit of an itch. I decided to be a little bit crazy and leave that, bounced around a little bit with some startup opportunities and ended up founding my own voice startup with the idea being, hey, it's really too hard to build voice applications today. I'm going to make it much easier for you to do it. Our tagline was WordPress for voice. If you know what WordPress is in the web world.
Of course. Yep.
Lots of templates makes it easy for a small business to get online really easily. We wanted to build that for voice. I will say, I think it's still a really good idea and in a lot of ways kind of untapped. But, you know, I think there's a saying that ideas are cheap and execution is hard. I certainly learned that. You know, I think we built a bunch of things, but we weren't fully executing. And so I started veering over into the kind of consulting side and doing my own consulting work. And that's when I entered that Bixby hackathon, won that, and those conversations led to where I currently am. But I'm super happy I did it. It was a great experience. It's something I'd always kind of in the back of my head, hey, go off and do your own thing, right? Whether it succeeds or fails, it doesn't matter. You got to itch that itch.
Exactly. I actually once heard that you learn more from failed startups than you do from successful startups. So I too have ventured into that area. I too have failed, and lots of great learnings have still come out of that. So you had mentioned Adam Shire, Viv Labs, Bixby, Samsung. Kind of tell me this whole relationship, how those all have come together. What exactly is Viv Lab and who is Adam Shire?
Yeah, so let me tell you about Adam first, a legend in voice. And Adam has been working in voice for like 25 years. Back, he worked at Stanford SRI on voice. And in around 2008, somewhere around there, they founded a startup called Siri and built really what was the first kind of consumer-facing voice assistant. Siri, most people don't know, was originally an app on iOS, and then very quickly Apple bought it. So Adam and his co-founder, Dag Kitlaw, worked with Apple for a couple of years and then went to leave because they really wanted to build kind of the next generation of conversational AI and voice assistants. And that's when they founded Viv Labs and built out the Viv Labs technology. And then a few years ago, Samsung bought Viv Labs and used it as the foundations of, some people call it Bixby 2.0 or the new Bixby, but the current Bixby that's on modern Samsung phones is based upon that Viv Labs acquisition. So Adam is our kind of our technology guru and leader. And quite frankly, his vision and where he'd like to see this industry go is a lot of the reason why I joined Viv Labs, because I really buy into his thinking about where voice and conversational AI can go.
Wonderful. So let me ask you a quick question about Bixby itself. Can you tell me where the name Bixby came from?
That's a great question. And I'm going to tell you, I actually don't know.
Why don't we ask Bixby?
Well, might as well. Bixby knows best.
Hey, Bixby, where did the name Bixby come from?
I've heard that in some cultures, Bixby means one with great intelligence who raps. Maybe that's why Samsung chose it for me.
Very good.
There you go. So Bixby is not a name. That's a Samsung invented that name on the original voice assistant. Samsung has a little bit of a history. There was something called S-Voice that then became Bixby. And the original Bixby is really largely focused on controlling the phone and not so much a general purpose voice assistant. And then when they bought Vivs, it was really to build that onto a general purpose voice assistant. I will say that the name Bixby is a good name for a voice assistant.
Why is that?
Yeah, good question. So when you say, hi, Bixby, or Alexa, or hey, Google, what happens is on the local device, it has to understand that phrase. And then most of the rest of the processing of anything you say really is done in the cloud. But you need local processing power on that device to say, hey, I heard that specific wake up word.
Okay.
And now I'll wake up and I'll start listening. In order to do that on the local device, you need to be saying something that's kind of got the right kind of syllables, got enough syllables, and has a mixture of vowels and consonants that make it easy to understand that term. Because you don't want to wake up for a false wake word. That's a problem in the industry. Is I say something and your voice assistant wakes up and you weren't addressing it. Bixby is a really good term because of the consonants and vowels and the way they're mixed in there. And then also just it's short, but phonetically the way it sounds is pretty distinct. And so whoever came up with that word, they were definitely thinking about this when they came up with that as the wake word for Samsung's voice assistant.
Got it. And it's a pretty unique word too. So I would think that it's not getting confused with maybe, you know, something that could be more common.
Yeah. Although there is a Bixby, there's a city called Bixby, I believe in Oklahoma. And then down in just south of us around Monterey, there's a Bixby Bridge. So it's fairly unique, but there is actually, there are other Bixbys in the world.
I did not know that. Interesting. Yeah.
And Bill Bixby, Bill Bixby played the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah. So
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So not a common word, but there are other uses for the word Bixby, other Bixbys, so to speak.
Interesting. So now you had mentioned that, you know, Bixby was available on Samsung devices. Can you talk a little bit about other devices? Is it just strictly for Samsung devices for their phones, or is it beyond the phone?
Yeah. So it is for Samsung devices right now. Here's the situation right now. So right now you can go and develop a Bixby capsule, and you can deploy it on a Samsung phone. And there's a marketplace for end users of the phones to go and enable your capsule. Think of the marketplace as the equivalent of the Play Store, or the Samsung Store, or the iOS, the App Store there. But it's for voice applications, capsules, as we call them. So that's all enabled for a phone. So you can build from end to end to get it out to consumers on phones.
And that's the Bixby Marketplace.
That's the Bixby Marketplace. What you can do right now, though, is you can build for the TV. Samsung is the world's biggest TV manufacturer by a pretty significant margin. The watch, well, the world's second largest smartphone watch manufacturer. And for smart appliances. So we have a refrigerator that has a screen on it, and it's a smart appliance. And we have huge market share in appliances. So you can build for all those devices, which to my mind is super exciting, because I think voice assistants currently have been kind of driven primarily by smart speakers. That's the first thing they got introduced, and now they're on phones. But that's led to a little bit of kind of smart speaker centric or phone centric thinking about what you can do when you add voice to the TV or the watch or an appliance. You start thinking of whole different and unique use cases where voice can unlock some pretty rich functionality. As you can say, I could Wayne go on and on about this, I get pretty excited about the opportunities on those additional devices. And so you can develop today on those, and then the marketplace is coming later this year. So super exciting stuff coming from us.
Okay, wonderful. So tell me a little bit about, you'd mentioned, you know, I know there are other voice assistant, you know, application software out there. How is Bixby different than its competitors?
So first, I already talked about all those different devices.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's a key differentiator. And let me dive in a little bit in one, because it's one I'm particularly excited. I'm particularly excited about the TV. And why I'm excited about that is I look at my, so my two teen daughters, they don't watch TV without their smartphone in their hand. So, and they will stop the TV and play with the smartphone. They want interactive TV, and it doesn't really exist today. And so they use a smartphone to enable that. Now I generally, you know, a different generation TV is kind of a passive thing and I listen to it, but I've been thinking about the TV and thinking about, hey, what happens if the TV was voice enabled and I can ask it things even while something is playing? The best example I like to think about is sports.
Of course.
So let's say I'm watching a sports game and I'm like, oh man, I want to hear more about that player. Or I don't know, I'm watching a football game and they call clipping. And maybe I'm new to football and they're like, what's clipping? Wouldn't it be cool if I could ask the TV, hey, watching the Warriors on TV, hey, tell me how many points per game is Stephen Curry, or who's Stephen Curry? And it gives me overlay some information about Stephen Curry there. And then I can go back to watching the game. Or a football example, hey, what's clipping? And it would show me what's clipping is, and I could better understand the game. I think that's incredibly powerful to bring kind of interactivity to TV and kind of empower what I see this kind of younger generation seems to want when they have their phones with the TV. And quite frankly, I will often say, I mean, we have some smart speakers next to our TV, and we'll pause it and ask it a question. So we want it too.
Yes.
Build that right in the TV. Build it into where it just shows up and then goes away. If you gave permission, you know, and I think there's some privacy implications to this, but about what you are watching on the TV to the voice assistant, then it could be really incredibly contextually aware and give you really amazing information. So I'm really excited about the devices that are coming out for Samsung, and that's a differentiator. The second big differentiator is really related to those devices. All those devices have screens.
Yeah.
So if you look at the voice market today, and you look at, let's just talk about, because they're obviously our competitors, Alexa, 85 to 90% of their devices are screenless, just a smart speaker.
Okay.
On the Google side, there's a lot of them. They do have it on the phone, but a lot of the use is on their smart speakers that are in the home. So most of what's being built is voice only. With Samsung devices, because all those devices I talk about, and it's fair to say in the future, most Samsung devices will have a screen. You need to build not only for a voice experience, but also a screen experience, that kind of multimodality, which I think opens up a ton of opportunities. And quite frankly, in some cases, some challenges around multimodality and building that. But it's a new frontier in a lot of ways to build truly multimodal experiences where you can interact with voice and screen and think about how they interplay with each other.
So I hadn't heard of that term before. So multimodality, that is where you have voice and screen at the same time on the same device.
Yeah, actually, it really refers to kind of, you actually are using it today when you use the mouse and the keyboard. So two put different input mechanisms
I see.
Into that is multimodal. You know, I always talk about swiping and typing as the two prompt dominant modalities right now, voice being a third one. I will tell you, it's pretty interesting if you look at kind of the rise of those modalities. We went from kind of keyboard, and then about 10 years later, the mouse arose and the GUI and that. Mm-hmm. And then about 10 years later, smartphones with touchscreens were introduced there. So swiping became and tapping became a modality. Well, guess what? Smartphones with screens are just a little over 10 years old. So by that 10-year cycle, it's about time for another modality to kind of arise.
Sure.
And voice definitely looks like that's modality. It does not replace typing and swiping. What it does is it augments. There's things where voice is the very best way to interact with technology. There's things where typing are the very best way to interact with technology. There's things where swiping on your smartphone are the very best way to interact with technology. It opens up a different way of interacting with technology and kind of empowers us to do more with our tech.
So then let me ask you, where do you see voice going, in the next year? And then even beyond that, you know, if we're talking 5 to 10 years, give me your thoughts, your ideas of where we really could be taking voice.
Yeah, so voice is in its infancy right now. I like to say that we're at the point where we're kind of barking commands.
Okay.
At the voice assistants. Another one, which gives me a laugh, is we're in the fart app stage. So that was the original apps. We're building smartphones. We're all apps that farted, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of in that stage with voice right now, really early. What I think I'd like to see in the next year or two is get a little beyond just barking command and actually get some things done. I'm actually pretty bullish about voice commerce. And if not actually going and buying things, actually starting the buying process and actually kind of that top of the funnel kind of marketing. And there's a whole idea of, hey, marketing, if I listen to the radio or TV, it's a one-way push toward me. Voice, I could have a conversation about a product,
sure,
right? I want more information. I don't. Kind of more of a pull marketing, I like to call it that. And then I also...
Let me just jump in real quickly. It sounds like what you're saying, that maybe where this could go is like, if I'm actually listening to an ad on the radio, I could, in a sense, have a conversation and ask more questions about that product that's being told to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that would be amazing.
Yeah. So it's interesting because I'll mention, so both Spotify and Pandora started, you know, they have a free ad tier.
Yes.
And they are experimenting just in the last month or two, this is in 2020, certainly, with this idea of if they're on a device that has a speaker and that, and you're using their client, they'll play an ad and say, do you want to hear more? And if you say yes, you get more information. You say no, you don't. Right. And that's really kind of infant, kind of simple steps.
Of course, yeah.
But that's pretty exciting to me is, hey, you know, I like all of many of us, you know, I kind of tune out the ads when I want to. But every once in a while, there's something I'm like, oh, that is really interesting. I'd like to learn more about that. Or I'd like to, I'll call it bookmark it.
Of course.
So I think there's a huge opportunity there to say, hey, remind me of this. Or, wow, that sounds really interesting. I'd like to hear more and start a conversation there. So that kind of interactive audio advertising, I don't know when that's all going to happen, but I'd sure like to see that happen in voice in the next few years. I think you did ask about like longer term, 5, 10 years out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So I guess the industry likes to call this idea of ambient computing, just computing around us that just does things for us. In some sense, it's just AI that knows we need to get things done and kind of preemptively does it for us. But voice is a big part of that. I could just walk into my house and start talking to it, or in my car or in my office and talk and get things done. I'm reminded of, there's a funny scene in one of the Star Trek movies. I think it's one of the early ones. When they go back in time and they go back to Earth and they're running, I believe it's through a hospital, and Scotty sees a mouse and he picks it up and he starts talking to the mouse. And of course, he doesn't do it. And he kind of mumbles under his breath about, you know, how unadvanced they are. You know, maybe we're going to get there where voice works well enough where much of our interaction with tech is done through voice.
Of course, yeah.
Like I said, I think keyboards have been around forever. They'll probably still be here in 10 years. And mouse and swiping and typing. I just think there's a bunch of things that if we think about it, we can do better with voice. Or voice is part to that multimodality, part sure. of that interaction with our technology. So that's where I'd like to see it go in 5 or 10 years, be kind of not a novel thing like it is now in a lot of ways, but it's just something you expect.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's crazy to think, you know, it seems like smartphones have been around forever, but it was not that long ago that truly the first smartphone was introduced to us. And 10 years from now is not much. And just think about the advancements that definitely voice will take over that time.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like truly understanding.
Yeah.
Human voice is really hard. I can say something to you in 10 different ways and you'll understand I'm saying the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
That's really hard for an AI to do that.
Yeah.
And so part of the challenges we have right now of voice is when you're developing a voice application, you need to be pretty deterministic about if a user says this way, then this is what you do. And here's some variations on how they say. Yeah. As the AI gets better, you won't have to be so deterministic in your development. You'll just say, when the user intends, this is their intention, right? Then go yes. do something like that. That's going to be a huge, huge unlock for the industry, but it is a really hard AI problem.
Yeah. You know, actually, some of the biggest laughs that we get in our house is when we listen to my wife try and talk to one of those voice automated systems that you see on phone systems when you're asking a question, trying to be transferred to a different department. And the phone system doesn't understand what my wife says. She doesn't say it any differently. She just says it more aggressively. She gets right. louder. She gets more angry, but she's still saying the same terms and it's still sending her to the wrong department. And, you know, myself, the kids, we all are just laughing as she just gets more and more frustrated trying to deal with this really, you know, low level AI system.
Yeah. You know, this industry calls those IVRs and they've obviously been around for a long time. And, you know, the driver there was cost reduction. Yep. Right. So it's expensive for a CSR to answer phones. Cost reduction, we all understand it, but sometimes doesn't put people first. And I think you yeah. saw that with IVR. It's funny when you were mentioning your wife getting frustrated, and I likewise, you know, I'll say hitting 0000 on an IVR often gets you out of it. But there's even websites that actually tell you how to, if you're stuck in IVR hell. Like this yes. is how you say, or this is the buttons you press to get out of that, which is pretty funny. But that you caught up in something I think is pretty interesting. We can all feel as humans emotions in our voice. Happiness, sadness, excited, bored, that. There is a lot of research being done around voice assistance, understanding kind of the emotion in there. Because just hearing a voice, we as humans hear obviously the words, but we also understand the emotion. There's subtle cues in how we say things. Obviously, we're face-to-face. There's also body language. One of the challenges in that AI I talked about is it just understand. It's saying, here's the words. What do those words mean? If I could understand the emotion of the user, that could be another input into my understanding. Or if you're pissed and angry and you're talking to an AI voice assistant, maybe you don't want it to be full of personality and cracking jokes. You want it to be direct and to the point. On the other hand, if you're having fun, maybe the personality of the voice assistant, the persona as the industry likes to call it, is more fun and cracks some jokes and is kind of friendly. I think there's a big unlock for voice assistants to understand kind of the emotional cues that we as yeah. humans are giving with the tone and how we say things.
Sure. So let's talk a little bit about discoverability. Uh-huh. So, you know, I can only imagine that there's a lot of third-party apps out there. What's Bixby doing to help make discoverability a little easier?
Yeah, there are a lot of third-party applications for all the voice assistants. And part of the challenge is you have to use the name. So if I call my voice app, we'll just say voice, the podcast helper.
Okay.
If I want to use the podcast helper, I have to say something like, ask podcast helper to start, or ask podcast helper to play my favorite podcast. The problem there is that ask podcast helper. I have to remember that phrase and I have to remember that term for the name of the application. The problem with discoverability is people don't remember that. And so they don't use it. And so if I just say, tell my voice assistant, play my favorite podcast, it's going to use whatever built-in functionality it has to play podcast, as an example.
And not podcast helper.
On the other hand, podcast helper may be a better experience.
Sure.
Or I, as a user, feel that podcast helper is my favorite way to listen to podcasts. So what we did with Bixby is we introduced late last year something called natural language categories. And it's really to address that. And the whole idea is these categories are categories of interactions. So like playing a podcast is one of our categories. I'll give you another example and give you an actual real world example. Weather is one of our categories. So if I ask Bixby, what's the weather like? What's the weather like today? What's the weather like next week? What's the weather like? He will answer that in the built-in weather capsule. Answers that. But I actually, in my Bixby, so there is a weather capsule called Big Sky that I really like. It goes into more detail. It's kind of for weather geeks, and I like weather. And so in Bixby, once I enable Big Sky, what I can do, because it's a part of the natural, like the weather natural language category, I, as an end user, can go and say, I want this to be the default. So the next time I say, hi, Bixby, what's the weather? Big Sky answers, not the built-in weather functionality. So what lets you do is choose and personalize your voice assistant. The closest thing, I mean, look at Android phones, look at Samsung phones. If you install two different map apps on an Android phone, the first time you go to launch a map, it says, hey, you have map app A or map app B. Which one do you want to use? And do you want to make one your default? Well, Bixby has really exactly the same thing, but for voice. So what's the weather like? If I've enabled two of them, I'll say, hey, you have weather capsule A or you have Big Sky. Which one would you like to use? Would you like to make one the default? So I said, hey, use Big Sky and make it the default. And from then on, Big Sky answers it. I can always go into settings and change that. Or I can always go back to that old kind of invocation name and say, ask weather app A for the weather, and it'll override, right? Because then I'm specifically addressing the name of a capsule, and that will answer. So we've had this in about 20 different categories. We keep on building these and thinking about it. And we think it's a big unlock to not only developers kind of solving this discoverability problem, but to my mind, even more importantly, as a consumer, I said I like Big Sky over the built-in weather app, but everybody has their own preferences there. So let the consumer choose what they want their experience to be.
Sure.
Their favorite provider for X, Y, or Z, and really personalize the experience to the consumer. So it's something it may come across in how I'm describing it, but we're definitely super excited about because he thinks there's such amazing possibilities there.
Yeah. No, that sounds great. So let's talk about getting started. If developers or designers want to think about getting into voice, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, so a couple things come to mind. The first is, when you're thinking about what you want to build, is voice the best interface for it? Right? So, you know, obviously I'm a fan of voice. I think it's amazing. I also think there's areas where typing on a keyboard or swiping on a screen are better interfaces, right, for what you're trying to do. So you need to think about if it's easier or faster or better to do it swiping or typing, I'd probably shy away from it.
Okay.
On the other hand, if it's hard or difficult, I always like to think about things where I'm like, wow, I got to go through 12 different menus to go do this. Wow. Voice might be really amazing there. So if you're going to replace some functionality, think about stuff that where voice is a better interface or where voice, it's just brand new. It would not work well without voice being the kind of the modality with which you interact with that technology. So that's number one. Number two, I'd say, is follow your passion.
Okay.
You know, the very best apps, PC, a phone, or for voice, are typically where the developer had some passion about it.
Yes.
And so it really comes through. So if you're passionate about cooking, maybe there's some cooking voice experience you can build. If you're passionate about exercise, maybe there's an exercise voice experience you can build. So I say, follow your passions because you're going to build something that passion will come through to people using your app. And you know what? It's going to be a heck of a lot more fun to build.
Yeah.
If it's something that follows your passions, you want to build something that you use, right?
Exactly.
You're like, I need this. This is fun. I'd use it. This is so cool. I want to share it with the world.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's how a lot of great entrepreneurs get started is they're doing something that they want, that they're excited about. And then they worry about, you know, the money and the marketing later, but
yeah,
completely agree with you. So in doing a little research for this interview, I discovered, I'd learned that you actually host your own podcast. tell me a little bit about the Bixby Developers Chat podcast that you host.
Yeah. So just started that in January of this year. You know, how to get started? I went and told my boss and said, I want to start a podcast. He said, go for it. I don't know what that means. I mean, he knew what it meant, but it was kind of like, go for it. Let's figure it out and see how it works. And really the genesis is, you know, every time I go to a voice conference, I have these kind of long, in-depth kind of conversations with people around, hey, what are you building with voice? What's your thinking about it? Where can you go in the future? And I really wanted to share some of those conversations with the world. You know, I'm passionate about voice. I have these great conversations with it. To my earlier point about what you're passionate about, go share it. So wanted to go share it with the world. And so I think we've done 11 podcasts right now. We do one every 2 weeks. Bring typically people in the voice industry in. And we talk about what they're doing, what they've built, what they think the future will look like. These are general conversations. We definitely talk about Bixby somewhat, but the whole idea was a little bit kind of a halo effect is, hey, people who are interested in voice would go listen to this podcast. And yeah, absolutely. We want them to go listen and go, hey, I got to go check out that Bixby and go try it out or develop something on it. I like what those guys are doing.
Yeah.
But the podcast, wide ranging. I've talked to voice designers. I've talked to some podcasters. I've talked to developers, and I continue to think of who would be an interesting guest to talk about it. It's a lot of fun. I continue to enjoy it. Listenership seems to be growing pretty well. So I don't know, from one podcaster to another. I think podcasting is a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. So for our podcasting fans, how can they find your podcast? Where are you guys hosted? What's it called?
Yeah, great question. Bixby Developers Chat. So any of your major podcast players, if you start searching for Bixby or Bixby Developers, that'll come across. We have a Bixby capsule. So if you enable it, you can say, hi, Bixby, play Bixby Developers Chat. And then we're online. If you just search for Bixby Developers Chat, and you can see it, and please listen and then let me know what you like or what you'd like to see in the future. I think a lot of the value out of podcasting is listening to your audience, and they'll say, yeah, I love this. I'd like more of this, less of this. Love to hear about it.
Wonderful. So you've been around voice for a long time. And in fact, you know, not just with your podcast, but prior to that, with all of your work with voice, I'm sure you've got a lot of experiences around voice. So tell me some of your favorite experiences and why.
Yeah. I'm going to say maybe my favorite capsule on Bixby is something built in. It's the Yelp capsule. And why I really like that is I talked earlier about, I said, voice is a great way to interface in many ways, but not always. So voice is a really great input modality. So if I wanted to find a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco that's open past 10 p.m. on Saturday nights, that's a pretty easy, you can understand exactly what I'm saying.
Sure.
There's a lot of information in that. Now, think about that if I was to search using a typical web interface, right? There's a lot of clicking and typing and things like that and drilling down I need to do there.
Yeah.
But if I just ask the Bixby Yelp capsule, something like that, it can parse all that input and then show me the results. So it's great for input modality. On the other hand, I get a list of restaurants. And a list of restaurants via voice may be kind of overwhelming. So that's a great place where the screen shows them on the screen, this list. And then I kind of go back to touch, right? I can swipe through those and touch and find more information. Why I like that is it's a great example of multimodality and kind of using the mixture of the modalities together. So the Yelp capsule on Bixby. The other thing I'll say, one of my favorite things to do on voice is, or just in generally, is I love trivia. And there's some pretty fun voice trivia experiences. One I really like, and a very popular one, it's called Question of the Day. It's actually quite simple, but really well done. So, boom, start Question of the Day, ask Bixby, hi Bixby, start Question of the Day. It gives you one question, multiple choice answers. If you get the answer right, you get a bonus question, and you can ask that. What's really well done in that is the content is really well done. So the questions are great. The content is great. I'm a sayer of content is king in voice. Mm-hmm. And that's a great example. It's incredibly simple what they built, but incredibly great because the content's so great. There's an experience that isn't on Bixby. I'd love to see come to Bixby.
What's that?
It's a trivia game called Feel the Pressure.
Feel the Pressure.
Which is on Alexa. Yeah, and they've done great content and really great sound effects. The sound effects in that game made me want to play that game more. And I love the thinking of what sound effects and the impact upon your kind of psyche are. So I love that game. But yeah, those are two examples of things that I think are done really, really well with voice.
Excellent. Excellent. I'll have to definitely check those out. So if people want to learn more about Bixby or even you as an evangelist, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So for Bixby, so www.bixbydevelopers.com. That is our website. And by the way, that is where you can go. I mean, today you can start developing for Bixby. So you download the Bixby Developer Studio or IDE. You can do all your development. There's even a simulator in there. So if you don't yet have a Samsung device, you can go and build in that simulator. And it's for the phone, the watch, the TV, and the smart appliance. So you can build all that. So that's BixbyDevelopers.com, kind of your home hub for everything Bixby. The other thing is I'd say follow us on social. We try to be pretty active on Twitter. So at Bixby Developers. You can also find us at Facebook, Bixby Developers, search for Bixby Developers on social. Myself, I am definitely pretty active on Twitter, at Roger Kibbe, at R-O-G-E-R-K-I-B-B-E. I love to talk about voice, what people are doing, what's happening, learn about new areas that people are exploring. So let's connect and continue the conversation on Twitter.
Excellent. Excellent. So let me ask you a few questions about Bixby Studio. So that's the software that's used to create your capsules. Tell me a little bit about getting Bixby Studio. Is this free? Does it cost?
Yep. 100% free. Yeah, literally, it's on the homepage of BixbyDevelopers.com. For Mac, Windows, and Linux, you download it. It's a full-blown IDE with develop, debug. There's a testing suite in there. There's a simulator, like I said, so you can go from end-to-end testing and you all do it in that IDE. There's no, it automatically syncs to the cloud. It's actually kind of a big competitive advantage for us is our IDE. Some of our competitors require you to do things and kind of sync to the cloud or use two different interfaces. Everything in Bixby Developer Studio is in one. You can do it all there and do all your development there. Until you're ready to submit to the marketplace. And then you start that within that studio as well.
So is there a process where developers have to be approved to publish their capsules?
Yeah, so much like what happens with the other voice assistants and happens in the various mobile phone app stores, there is a process. So you submit your capsule with information for the marketplace and that, and some information for the reviewers if necessary. And then there's a review process and they make sure, you know, there's certain rules around, you know, appropriate content or have you, does it actually work? Particularly tricky with voice, right? People won't always phrase something the same way. So you want to build a little bit of flexibility. You create these things called hints, which are kind of phrases that will kick off your voice experience or capsule. You want those to work. So the reviewers check all that and make sure it all works. And if that's all working, then it will go live in the marketplace. And if it doesn't, they'll give you some feedback. One of the things we're particularly proud about is our developer kind of outreach in a lot of areas around there. And if somebody doesn't pass, we try to give really useful feedback about, hey, here's what you need to fix. And we also give feedback around, hey, this went live, but this could be even better. X, Y, or Z, because it's all in our interest to have really great capsules on the marketplace. So our developers spend our capsule review team spends a little more time reviewing things because part of their job is to give some constructive feedback on, you know, good to great, I like to say.
Exactly. So not just does it work or does it not, you know, pass or fail, you're actually giving more insight on how to improve it to get more success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. That's great. That's great. All right. So I am going to finish off with our last question here, our last topic. In doing a little research on Viv Labs and Adam Shire, I came across this Penn and Teller video of him doing magic. So, and I've then found some other videos of Adam doing magic, and I'm wondering, does magic work its way into Viv Labs? I mean, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so absolutely does. So Adam is actually this pretty talented amateur magician. He probably could go professional if he really put his mind to it. So he loves to talk about magic, and he seems to know everyone in the magic industry. He's incredibly well connected there. So a couple things happen. One, we have what we call Friday Magic. So every Friday afternoon, kind of near the end of the day, we have a magician come in and do some magic, which is really kind of a cool way to start the weekend, you know?
Sure.
All right, you know, the work week is over. We'll all laugh and be entertained with some magic, and then we all go home. That happens. It's a lot of fun. We definitely, when we go to trade shows, we often bring a magician in place, sometimes to very entertaining results there. But yeah, it's just one of these fun little side things that happens. We have that Friday magic. We talk about it. We do it at trade shows. It makes me smile thinking about it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Those were great. It was a nice discovery. Well, hey, Roger, absolutely appreciate you taking the time. This has been a great interview. I love getting to know more about you and also about Bixby and Voice. So again, thank you very much for joining me on today's podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Always love to talk to Voice. Thanks so much.
So before I end this show, I want to do something a little fun with Bixby. So Bixby says she can rap, but I want to know, hey, Bixby, can you beatbox?
Check this out. Looking to start creating for Samsung? Download the latest tools to code your next app. Or get software for designing apps without coding at all. Sell your apps to the world on the Samsung Galaxy Store. Check out developer.samsung.com today and start your journey with Samsung.
The PAL podcast is brought to you by the Samsung Developer Program and produced by Tony Moreland.